Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to episode 109 of Double Hop Beat, where we take the pulse of the beer and brewing scene. I'm James, a home brewer and craft beer enthusiast.
And I'm Shannon, a beer intermediate. This episode, being blown over from the Windy City, we are joined by Greg of Hoptuary Brewing. Welcome, Greg.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it. So as we do with most of our guests, we're just going to jump right in, get to the good stuff, and talk about your journey into the home brewing process. So what is your origin story? How did you get started?
So I guess it's been just over 10 years. I used to follow a website called techbargains.com, where, you know, they can find all the deals on electronics and TVs and whatnot. There was a thing from, I think it was Midwest Supply. So I think they've been bought out or joined with Northern Brewer at this point. But they had a deal for a 5-gallon homebrew kit. And I'm like, all right, you know, just out of college, just bought a house. I'm like, sure, why not? You know, because everything that we were drinking in college was, you know, big macro beer, Budweiser, Coors. And I'm like, just getting into the IPA scene, and I was like, you know, why not try and make my own beer? You know, it's cheaper than buying it, right? That's always the caveat as a home brewer. It's cheaper to make it than it is to buy it. So I was like, all right, and just started doing that and made a few extract kits, and that was the easy part of the brewing adventure, and everything spiraled out of control at that point. So
it went downhill in a good way, I'm assuming.
Downhill in a good way. Yeah, that was back when it may have been cheaper to make it than to buy it.
When you just got a plastic bucket in your stovetop, that is cheap. But once you start really getting invested, that's when it starts to add up.
Yeah, and that it spiraled out of control real quickly. So,
well, that's good that you had a good first experience too, because, you know, if it doesn't turn out so well, you end up buying the beer anyway.
Right. Yeah, and I believe there was a Mr. Beer kit in there somewhere, which, you know, I don't think I've ever heard somebody having a positive experience with Mr. Beer kit.
He who should not be named.
Yeah, I think the only one we had made, I think you made one that our friend found in their basement. It was a couple years old.
Using an expired kit, and we were trying to see if it, even with the expired ingredients, if it would still come out okay. And that was just adding, you know, recipe to disaster on top of everything else. Yeah.
Those either turn into bottle bombs or they're flat.
I don't even know if we got to the bottle process. I think it just
didn't
went to the
out.
Graveyard.
Yeah, and we even replaced the yeast as well. We did a refresh yeast, so we wanted to take that out of the equation.
Give it a chance.
But you know, the great thing about that is, though, they were like the first that I can think of that made it accessible to the average consumer to be able to make something at home. So I do have to give them kudos and props for like getting people to be like, hey, I could do this. Like, I could make something. I can make beer. Mm-hmm. Not so much the it's going to be drinkable. It's more about the process and just get you hooked kind of a thing.
Yes. Yes, that is for sure.
And so you started your home brewing, and what's your setup like now to fast forward? What are you brewing on?
So right now I have a 20-gallon all-electric spike system. Started out with, it used to be three of their 20-gallon flat-bottom kettles, and recently upgraded to two of the bottom drain kettles. And then about 6 or 7 years ago, found a partially built 50-amp electric panel that, with some help of some friends, finished building that out. So that lives in the garage at my house. And then I have a dedicated room in the basement that's got my keyser, all my ingredients storage, and I have two spike CF10 conicals and a DIY glycol chiller.
Nice. So pretty much a spike guy with a couple DIY equipment that you've pieced together over time.
Yeah.
And what's the biggest game changer piece of equipment that you've upgraded to since starting your homebrewing? What would you say if you had to pick one item in your brewery?
One item, I would probably go with the conicals and with the glycol temperature control. You know, the ability to lager and just control temperature to the T is probably the biggest improvement because, you know, I know a lot of people struggle with temperature control and that, you know, the little bit, you know, yeast is usually forgiving here and there, but, you know, trying to do stuff in a teaser or a temp chamber, which I did for a while, you know, the just that extra little bit of controllability is it's huge.
And when you say you DIY'd your glycol chiller, what does that entail? Like, how did you, in case anybody else wants to DIY one?
It was Google and homebrewtalk.com, a little plug for them. That's the biggest resource that any homebrewer has these days. You know, no more sticking your nose in a book like they used to have to do. But yeah, found a couple pages on some guys that built glycol chiller using a old window AC unit and a cooler. So one day found a guy who was selling a air conditioner. He ended up, you know, we got to chat and he lives, I don't know, 10 miles away from me. He's like, dude, I'm not even going to sell it to you. Bring me a couple bottles of homebrew and it's yours.
That's so awesome.
I'm like, the homebrewing scene is the best for people. It's just like, it's that niche where everybody's automatically friendly with you and just do things for each other to help each other out.
For sure.
That's really funny you said the AC units, because my first homebrew shop where I got my original kit and my first experience with getting into homebrewing, that was their setup in the back. They had, I think they got 4 recycled AC units that people were just giving away, and they ended up using those basically to do their temp control. So that's really, really cool for me to hear somebody also doing that today, or not today, but, you know, within your homebrewing experience as well.
And that's the other thing that I love about, you know, homebrewing is the amount of freedom that you have to DIY your own stuff. You know, whether it's an electric panel that you're doing, or, you know, like the glycol chiller, or building your own 3-vessel system out of old half barrels, things like that. It's crazy the amount of, you know, stuff that you can just make on your own.
And now you mentioned that you switched from your spike flat bottom kettles to 2 of the bottom drain vessels. Now, how big of a game changer was that for you in terms of cleaning? And I know a lot of people have had their eyes now on those new easy to drain kettles. Was that a big game changer for you, or it was just a nice to have and did save you a little bit of time?
I guess it's more of just a perk, you know, instead of having to go and take and dump the kettle out at the end with the tube and, you know, all the gunk at the bottom, you just have to take and open a valve and it all drains out. There's no more lifting. And same thing with the mash tun. The mash tun, it makes you feel like you're more of a pro brewer because it was the mash tun with the door. I know everybody looks at that thing and their eyes just kind of open up and light up because, oh, I get a door. I can dump my grain out like the pros do and things like that. And, you know, it was just a little fun perk thing to go out and, you know, frivolously buy that.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of had to ask for forgiveness from my wife after she saw the stuff arrive, but, you know, she's she's very, very understanding with the brewing stuff, as long as she gets to splurge on a few things for herself.
It's a quid pro quo for sure.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
If you want the nice Corvette in the driveway, you know, it equals out, you know.
Yeah. As long as she gets to ride shotgun, probably, you know, that seems to be all right with things.
I'm going to go off topic for 1 second because, James, you have said the word game changer like 10 times already. So
is that the drinking word like of this episode? The game changer?
That's the drinking word. It's every time James says game changer. And you guys can drink for the 10 times he's already said it. But
instead of I'm just substituting now, it with game changer.
Now you have to try not to say game changer. So given over those 10 years that you've been brewing, do you have a beer that you really love and you like are itching to make all the time and that you kind of have to you know, I'm not going to do it now because I got to make some other different things. Like, what is your favorite beer that you've made?
I don't know if there's really a favorite. There used to be a favorite because you couldn't get it in the Chicago area, which was Zombie Dust.
Yeah. Ooh, I love Zombie Dust.
Couldn't get that for the longest time. And so once, you know, everybody was talking out there about, you know, clone recipes of Zombie Dust, it's just, you know, it's all Citra. And so I used to always make that just because you couldn't get it. And then once you were able to get it over here, it kind of moved its way towards, you know, something different where you couldn't get it. So you tried to clone things and then kind of got away from trying to do clone beers and got into doing more, trying to do recipe development myself from scratch. And, you know, everything, a lot of my favorite beers, it's hops and IPAs and just tons and tons of, you know, with you guys know the exponential amount of varieties of hops out there. You can never stay on top of things. So yeah. Always trying to brew some sort of an IPA, whether it's a West Coast or a hazy. But, you know, I also have fun with a couple buddies of mine where we try and do barrel projects with, you know, stouts and barley wines. And if it's not that, then we're doing lagers. So that's kind of the biggest thing lately is my two other buddies. We always try a couple, you know, at least 3-4 times throughout the course of the year to do a group brew, and we all do something different with the beer. That's whether fun. It's yeast or hop schedules with dry hopping, and, you know, then we just take and share beer with each other, or sometimes we've even gone to try and clone a beer that was done by a brewery that made its way into either Zymergy or Craft Beer and Brewing, something like that gets published. And we actually reached out to a local brewery that got one of their recipes published, gave their brewers some of the beer, and, you know, got them to give us some feedback on which ones they like, stuff like that. So there's really no specific beer that I like to do. It's always trying to do something different or tweak a recipe and try and improve things. So, you know, I know that was a real long-winded way to get to your
long-winded
question,
no, but pun intended. But yeah, I mean, I think that's really great. And that's one of the things I love about home brewing is just the ability to have that freedom. And I know we've talked on it on the show with, you know, pretty much every home brewer we've talked to when we asked that question. And, you know, I think we've only had maybe one or two that's really just stuck to one specific style or one specific beer that they really gravitate towards. And I think you brought a really good point of bringing your friends into it and making them part of your hobby and what you love to do, which is amazing. And you mentioned barley wines, and that's a really great style that I think the really great breweries out there will have one, but usually it's a seasonal. So I think it's really great that you've diversified and tried to make a barley wine and get your friends involved.
Yeah, and I've got one of my two buddies, he's a big barrel guy, but he's also a big, you know, IPA hop head. So, you know, we're always bouncing ideas on recipes and stuff off each other. And so, you know, he kind of helps fuel the fire to brew way too much and try and drink it as fast as you can so you can brew again. So
now, being in Chicago, have you found that you have to really play up to the season, or do you just brew what you feel like? I tend to have like the worst timing where I will brew these heavy barrel aged beers for the like the heat of the summer, and I'm like, what am I doing? This 12% beer is just not gonna fly, you know, in 80, 90 degree weather. So in Chicago, do you have to really keep that in mind, or you just go with whatever just you're
crank
feeling?
Crank up the AC, James.
So luckily, I haven't really had issue with timing where things come out in the summer, especially if it's, you know, big barrel beers or something like that. Because half the time, if we were doing a barrel beer, we'll brew it in the winter with luckily the, you know, the garage, you know, you got to have it open for the boil, which mm-hmm. I guess with big beers, you're usually boiling for a couple hours. But sometimes we'll try to get those so it's maybe a late fall brew and then it's ready over the summer. And then by the time you're ready to get that in the keg, it's going to sit in the keg for, you know, 3-4 more months so it can sit and mellow and, you know, get rid of the alcohol burn if that's present. But, you know, just when it comes to, you know, brewing with the seasons around here, it's pretty, you know, at least this year we're spoiled with the very mild winter. But no, I've definitely brewed when it's 0 degrees out and snowing. And, you know, just have to keep the garage open for a minimal amount of time and things like that. You know, ideally, if and whenever we move, get and build a basement brewery, you know, that's the one perk of being electric. I don't need to worry about propane or mm-hmm. any of that stuff, which, you know, that was a transition phase that I went through with everything. So, but no, I don't think, you know, seasons don't really play too big of an influence on what I'm doing.
Brewing in your garage like that in the dead of winter, 0 degrees, sounds like it's like the home brewer's like sauna. Like it just like
it's a neighborhood party. It's like the bonfire of, you know, you're just all drinking, trying not to drink so much that you're when you get to the important part.
Is that you James?
Clean? No, not at all. I try and keep friends to a minimum while I'm brewing, just for that exact reason. It can tend to get a little out of control.
Yes, I totally agree. I've definitely had a couple experiences where we had friends over where we were brewing and somebody forgot to watch the pot where we were doing a second, you know, we had a second pot on a propane burner and he definitely boiled over the beer and forgot to add bittering hops when they were supposed to go in. And yeah, it can spiral out of control quickly.
That's when you're like, ooh, I was supposed to take the other car out of the garage before I started brewing. Well, it's going to stay there. And then when you get in the car the next day, well, it smells like a mash going on.
It always smells like a mash going on in our house.
So it really does.
I feel like I just get used to it.
The neighborhood's just like, oh, they're brewing again. There we go.
Yep.
The smoke signal is going off. So
they're going, how many beers are on tap today? 4? Oh, you only got 2 on? All right. Well, come next week.
Yeah, right.
So over your journey, you've obviously established a brewery name and a logo. Do you mind just telling us a little bit behind what the inspiration is for those who have not been on your Instagram or seen your logo? It is a hop with, I'm guessing are angel wings, but you can correct me if that's wrong because there's a halo involved. So why don't you kind of tell us, like, what's the inspiration? How'd you come up with that name?
The name kind of came pretty easily. I originally had a different name, which was taken up by a brewery that actually was on the south side of Chicago at one point. I think is now closed. The preface of the name was more of a hop sanctuary. Was toying through a couple of super duper complex thoughts on a logo with like a hop by some giant stairs for a monastery type thing. And then I got talking to a buddy on Instagram who lives down state, and he's kind of into graphic design and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And he offered to help me out pull together this logo, and he actually turned it around super quick with maybe 1 or 2 iterations of it. And it's kind of stuck real. And I've really had no reason to change it because it kind of defines everything that's there. You know, the angel wings and the halo, you know, those may or may not be tweaked further down the road, but, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of solidifies, you know, a hop as a kind of as a as an idol, you know, in
I like
not
it.
In the not in like the religious sort of kind of in the religious sort of way, but you know, it's very very hop focused. Like without hops, that beer just doesn't exist. And mm-hmm. especially with the amount of IPAs and stuff that I make that I love, it just it really kind of works and defines what the brewery mm-hmm. kind of stands for.
Yeah. Now the funny thing, when I first saw your logo on the tiny little thumbnail that is Instagram, I thought at first it was a hop with the grains making it look like wings, but they were grains. And then on the top, it was a yeast cell. So I thought, oh my God, he's a genius. How did he knows what a cell looks like. And then I'm just like, oh wait, never mind. It's a halo.
Maybe
it's
that's the thing. Next iteration, James.
I'm
you
like,
don't know.
Oh my God.
I was just gonna say, I'm gonna steal that from that you idea. For sure.
There you go.
But I mean, everyone has, I mean, whether or not you're religious or like you could have religion in any aspect, like brewing could right. be your religion. So I think it's cool,
still work.
You
exactly.
pay homage to the hops.
The yes. hops are above yes. everything else. Shit.
Yep.
It could be a good exactly. hop. It could be a bad hop. It all depends on where you use it in the boil. Depends on what, you know.
You can have your hop shrine.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. There you go.
Surprised yes. James doesn't have one already.
Now, being a home brewer that you've kind of established your recipes, you started to get more comfortable with your brewing and sharing it with others. Can you tell us a little bit about how you've entered in competitions, how you've fared in them, what your biggest piece of advice for someone getting in would be?
So competitions is something I really only started doing a few years ago, and I haven't done a whole lot, just a few around the Chicago area, and I'm trying to do a few more this year. Obviously, it's been a little tougher to do with, you know, the family and the kids and stuff like that. But now that they're getting older, I'm trying to get a little bit more focused on trying to enter beers into competitions, because, you know, you can give beers to club members and friends and, you know, family members, and they're, you know, nobody's really going to give you that honest, blind advice of, oh yeah, no, this beer actually has some flaws to it. Or, oh yeah, you know, here's some critiques. You can go and do, you know, this doesn't really work to the style, which that's the one downside about competitions, is that you need to make sure that whatever beer you're brewing mm-hmm. is brewed to the specific style that you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, coming from that, I've been judging in a couple of the competitions around for, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Drunk Monk. It's one of the largest ones in the Midwest.
I think we
should do something like 600 entries. So it's a fairly large competition. Mm-hmm. Been judging in that one for, I don't know, 6-7 years at this point, but I finally went and took the BJCP tasting exam to actually get officially
a judge.
Exactly.
Bam,
exactly.
Official. So, game
so
changer.
Not, yeah. So I'm not just that guy who's there to drink beer.
Now you're doing that in an official capacity.
Exactly. But yeah, that's the one big thing with people. You know, if I had a piece of advice, is to make sure that you are familiar with the guidelines and the style that you're shooting for, and to make sure that you read there, because the guidelines, they help you out a lot with what needs to be part of the recipe, whether it's malt or yeast or hops. You know, they pretty much outline everything that you need, and you just got to come through and figure out the percentages and, you know, pull together the beer and brew it correctly, and then have a nice final product, and then you're going to do, you know, you should do fairly well in the competitions. And then you go submit it, enter it, you get the feedback from the judges, then you go back, tweak the recipe based on, you know, any suggestions that were given, give it another shot next time you brew, and, you know, you keep building on it and trying to tweak that recipe.
Now, from your experience as a judge, when you're judging a beer, are you on the, you know, the conservative side of the bench, where you look at the criteria and you will judge that beer solely based on kind of what they're looking for that style? Or is that, you know, raspberry banana blonde ale that's completely a little bit outside, it's within parameters but outside of the scope, is that something that then you would rate that higher over one that's strict by the books, traditional blonde ale? Just to give an example, what kind of realm when you're judging do you kind of go by when you're judging?
I kind of go by the would have to go by the book. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when you're if you're entering a beer that's, and I've been guilty of this, where you accidentally entered into the wrong category.
Yep.
Like I had a barley wine, which I just entered. I entered it as an American barley wine instead of a English barley wine. And feedback that I got from the judges was, this beer has got barrel characteristics. It's not bitter enough. You know, this would have been better entered as a English barley wine. Mm-hmm. Luckily, it's still metal, but it would have done better as the correct category. And, you know, with your example with a, you know, a blonde ale that's got, you know, fruits and whatever else in there, you know, if it was a good beer, you usually give the feedback that, you know, this is a great beer, but it does belong here. And, you know, you're technically supposed to knock it down a peg or so, but you still have to make sure that you give that positive feedback and say, hey, this is a killer beer, but you would have really done better if you were looking for, you know, XX category instead. So, you know, I'm not going to sit there and bash a beer unless, you know, you get a beer that, I think one that I know I tasted one beer that it tasted like cigarettes and Coca-Cola.
Gross.
Sounds like a good time to me, Shannon.
Somebody had a party when they were making
that
beer.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
oh,
talk about getting a little out of control while
someone's
brewing.
Someone's friend needed to not get so close to the
They're
packaging.
Like, I've got an adjunct for you. Here's my smoked cigarette.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
it wasn't a Marlboro Red Ale, was it?
I don't even remember what that one was. It was some sort of a barrel aged stout, but I don't know. We had a Grandmaster judge that we had them taste that, and they could not figure out what was wrong with that beer.
If it was barrel aged, I really wonder if the person was a smoker, and if it's in their house, if that like smell got absorbed into the wood. That's so interesting.
Very well could have, but yeah, to get the mix of smoke and
Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
It must have been someone standing over the bottling with a stogie.
It just reminds me of the
mouth,
80s or something. I don't know.
drinking their Jack and Coke while they're bottling.
Yeah.
The ash falling in.
But I think as a judge, that's like an honorable way of, you know, thinking professionally about judging a beer. And, you know, I've seen different strategies where homebrewers might intentionally put a beer in a category that it's not supposed to make that stand out, especially to get it to go at least farther than they, you know, if they don't have that much confidence in that beer, to try and almost trick the judges to making it stand out, to put it higher above ones that technically might be a better beer, a better example of that style. But I think it just shows the different strategies that homebrewers have played, both entering, both intentionally and unintentionally, but also from the judging side of, you know, you're not going to get those judges necessarily all the time that think the way that the approach that you have, Greg, that I think is the right approach to have if you're entering in a true to style, you know, competition. If you have a, you know, a free for all category, by all means, pick the Cocoa Puff, you know, blonde. Not that I would think that would be a good combination whatsoever. But, you know, to each their own in that category. But I think that's a great point that you touched on of just if you are a judge to just be mindful of whatever competition you're judging to, you know, critique accordingly, but give that positive feedback as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So one thing that we want to touch on before we wrap up with you, and this was something that James saw on your Instagram and got us excited because it's technically local to us. And that is, you were able to participate in the blind tasting through Treehouse for their data set series. So if you don't mind, talking a little about that, I know you have a YouTube video, so I won't ask you to do, you know, like the whole reveal and everything, so folks can go check that out on YouTube. But if you don't mind just talking through, how'd you find out about it? What was it? How was the experience? What are the deets?
So that was an idea from my buddy Dimitri. And so it's on his YouTube. His YouTube handle is Secret Level. He's also on Instagram as well. And he has, we're part of this, I guess it's more of a virtual beer club, mm-hmm. with some guys from all over the country, East Coast, West Coast, down south, and then there's a few of us in the Midwest, and he does a lot of beer trading with some of the guys out east to get stuff like Treehouse and
the black market stuff.
Yes, so he sends the good stuff from around here, you know, Hop Butcher, Phase 3, Roaring Table, Revolution, stuff that they can't get out there, and he was able to acquire the entire data series from Treehouse, which was all, if I remember correctly, it was all IPAs, same grain bill. And I believe they were just doing different things with the yeast. Mm-hmm. So there was a mix of thylized yeast in there. There was, your typical hazy yeast like Lemon Ale 3. There were some that were done with Chico. I believe there was one in there that was maybe done with 3470. And we were trying to do this as best as we could blind to see if we could pick out what was going on in these beers and then pick our top three. And it was a fun night. I'm glad I Ubered over to his house to go and do this.
For sure.
I believe each beer was at least 8%. Yep. So, but yeah, it was a blast to do. And you know, it kind of goes along with the lines of judging things and trying to figure out what's going on with beers and all geeky and nerdy.
Yeah, that's definitely a good test of your, when you are going to judge, like, can you pick up the different yeasts and the different flavor profiles? That's a really good test. And that's just a cool experiment, especially from a brewery that is so coveted now. Although, if you come in Massachusetts, they have like 5 or 6 locations. They're really, really expanding in this area. So...
Yeah, and that's one place it's definitely on the bucket list to get out to the East Coast and go visit them, and you know, a few of the other good
hundreds of breweries, good hazy,
the amazing IPA-rich gold mines we have in our side of the country.
I mean, yeah, just from here Vermont is just, and even into Maine now, there's a lot more. There's some pretty big names, I feel like, coming out of the New England area recently.
Yeah, it's like I need to move out there for a month to go and try and hit these places up.
And then you end up broke because you spent all your money on all those amazing places. And you're like, what happened? I just moved to the East Coast. It's supposed to be cheaper out there.
Oh, no. I don't know what articles you'd be reading if that was what you thought.
What? They still have snow? Oh, God, no.
Yeah. I'm not missing snow, that's for sure.
Okay, well, as we wrap up, do you want to let people know again what your Instagram handle is, where they can find you?
So the Instagram handle is Hoptuary Brewing, and that's about the only place that I live. Facebook is Facebook's for the personal stuff, but yeah, Instagram's there. May at some point try and start a YouTube channel, but that might be a few years down the road when time becomes more abundant.
Yes, yeah. For sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate the time. It was great talking to you guys.
And this is your episode-ly reminder that we have merch.
Merch.
So go over to the link on our Instagram to access the site. And there you can find our podcast merch as well as our Brew Another Day initiative. And if you are a home brewer like Greg and want to come on and tell your story, send us a direct message on our Instagram.
And remember to rate, review, and subscribe, because that helps us reach new listeners just like you.
This has been
Double Hoppy.
Catch you on the brew side.